Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 20th. I'm John Gibson, and on a rainy Sunday evening with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How about you, man?
Trying to stay dry, although it's not supposed to rain that long or that much, but it is the rainy season, so we expect.
Yeah, I came out of the office. I'm going, oh, this isn't rain. And then by the time I got to the station, hey, when did the rain start?
Right. All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Dragons outfielder Ricardo Nanita, and we're going to talk about the Dragons interleague, Ichiro, and so much more. We've got to start swinging or we won't finish. So let's go.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I grabbed Ricardo Nanita, and I'm not even going to try to say his name correctly.
Yeah, please don't.
Yeah, because as you'll hear in the interview, he ripped me apart for trying, so.
He didn't rip you, although you were probably the thing he was most critical of. Your pronunciation is the most critical thing he is.
So, yeah, I pulled him aside at Seibu Dome on June 10th, and he just turned 35 on June 12th, so happy belated birthday, Ricardo. I'll have to say it American style, Ricardo.
It's called Ricky.
It's called Rick. He's a Dominican guy. He joined the Dragons last year, and he was a decent player for them last year, and he really likes the game, you can tell. And I got the sense from talking to him that he enjoys the preparation, the games, he's having fun in Japan, and he came into the season, you could tell he had lost some weight. He got into better shape. He'll talk about that in the interview. He had a 20-game hitting streak earlier this season. And with the Chicago White Sox organization at Great Falls, he had a 30-game hitting streak in 2003, which set the Pioneer League record that year. So this is a guy he's been a hitter. And he also used to play center field. So he's a good fielder, even though the Dragons yank him at every opportunity. Or they did last year. I shouldn't say that this year because they leave him out there a lot more than they did last year. But they yank him in favor of a defensive replacement late in games whenever they have the chance or the need. So, but this is a guy who had this season, he didn't have enough at-bats early on to qualify for the batting title. And as soon as he did, his batting average kind of dropped off a little bit. And then came interleague, so he had to face all those good pitchers in the Pacific League. But his on-base percentage is really high, and he's doing really well for the Dragons. So let's hear what he had to say. All right, on the show with us this week is Ricardo Nanita.
You sound Japanese. Ricardo Nanita.
Okay, that sounds better. All right, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right, what has been your biggest challenge in adjusting to Japanese baseball in your one-plus seasons?
To last, you know, to stay healthy, to do the same hard work every day. That's the most hard, the hardest thing in Japan. And you know, just to pitch in, you know, getting help, all the information that I can get from coaches, scouts, this, and you gotta do every day. You gotta have your mind right to play here. You gotta be tough. You're gonna get tired. So that's the hardest thing is to last, stay healthy, and get the information to get to hit against these pitchers.
Yeah, if you want to stay healthy, I think diving after those crazy balls that you did about a month ago, that's not a good way to stay healthy.
I know, but we have guys here, strength coach, that help me every day. I mean, before I go to play, I've been stretching like 10 times.
Yeah.
But I get that help, you know, for the games. I do the same. So I stretch like 2 or 3 times a day with them. So
good. Okay. All right, so you had a good season last year, and what did the coaches tell you for your preparation for the off season? Because you came back a little bit better shape.
Last year, you know, first year I didn't know anything about Japan baseball. I just heard like, don't get surprised of anything. You're going to see a lot of different things. Last year was, I thought I was a little, you know, not in shape for this league.
Mm-hmm.
For another league, I was in a good shape, but
right.
For this league, you gotta be ready. And I had surgery. I had bone chips removed.
Elbow.
That's why I stopped playing, like in late July. I mean, I was, you know, sharing the left field with Wada-san, Fuji-san. And after I had surgery, I got fat, and then I was that time, you know, 2 months after that here in Japan, I was just thinking that I can do to be a good player here. So that was my mind every day, thinking what I can do, and it was preparation, getting in the best shape that I can, and you know, try to learn from that year. So I came here, keep working, and I'm doing good so far. So I just want to last until the last day.
Okay. Yeah, I know that you've been doing well. You've had good results. How have you changed your swing to adjust, or your approach to hit Japanese pitching?
I mean, I think I got the same swing, but I got, you know, one more year of experience. I mean, and when the day comes fast, you get better every day because you see more pitching. But the coaches, they are on me every pitch. Every foul ball, I can look to the dugout and tell them something. Because I like that, because you can make an adjustment right there.
Right.
You don't have to wait for the next day or next at bat. We're doing that. We talk about hitting every day. So information, and that's what we're doing now.
Okay. I know you had a 30-game hitting streak in the minor leagues. You had a 20-game hitting streak recently here. What was that experience like?
Man, I remember that year. It was
2003.
It was crazy year, man. I was hitting. Sometimes I was hitting. Sometimes I didn't want to play, and I had hits. And it was happening here, so you got to enjoy it. This is a tough league, man. It's, because they don't challenge you. They want you to chase you. So if I'm getting hits every day here, I got to take them, because you never know the next day. This is tough pitching here, man. You don't know what to expect sometimes.
All right. Now, you played center field before in the minor leagues, and you came here and see. That's Mr. Araki saying C there. You played center field in the minor leagues before, so you come here, and now all of a sudden, sometimes they put in a defensive replacement and take you out in the games. What is that like?
Because I'm not Japanese. You know, they are the best defensive players. They are the best base runners. So, and I respect that. And you know, when I used to play center field, was like 15 years old, younger. So now I just say okay, no problem. I get ready for tomorrow, and so, because it helps me, helps the team, and I take yes, and you know, I get some rest.
Yeah, rest is important too. Oh, there's Mr. Morty. All right, now Diane Viciado, he's been a really good source of power, and yeah, been really good for you. But other than that, what's the difference in this team from last year?
Power. You said it. He got a lot of power. He swings hard every time. He's not afraid of hitting or swinging. So when he swings, I swing, and the next guy swings. So when you get run swinging, you know, we don't like, you know, walks. We want to swing. We just gotta be so patient here, because you gotta let the ball come to you, because they're gonna be, you know, trying to get you to chase, to reach out. So
right.
We don't want to do that, but we're going there to swing. We're not afraid of it.
How is the absence, you know, Hector Luna gone to the Hiroshima Carp? You guys remember him or think about him?
Oh, yeah. You know, Luna, he was a great player in this team, in this league. He made his name here. You know, a good average shooter. You know, he was in the middle of the order here, so he did great here. So now he's in Hiroshima now. So now we got Viciado, so we're good now.
Okay. Now, do you see differences in the manager this year from last year? I know he was playing and managing last year. Now he's just managing. What difference do you see?
He got more time to talk to each one of us. He doesn't miss anything. If he doesn't let go anything. He tells you right away what you have to. Sometimes I just know what he's gonna tell me because I knew I did something wrong. I know he's gonna tell me that. So he's right on it every time, and he, you know, having more fun this year. So we're playing better than last year. So more communication, more chemistry now. So
how is the communication? You say he tells you, but like,
wow, it's like 100% different from last year. Because everybody's smiling, everybody's happy. So. We talk, like I tell you, we talk every day. We go out and eat dinner. We talk about hitting every day. Every day.
Now, we talked about DCA, though. What have you been doing? Because he's so new to Japan. What have you been doing to take care of him?
Oh, I mean, we got good translators here. I think that's our MVP. I mean, we got Noboru-san. That guy is the best.
Katsuragawa-san,
yes. He's the best, and I help him with everything that I can. I mean, and he's a good hitter, so when you hit, it's better for you in life. So that's what happened.
Okay, last question. Now, you guys had injuries. Drew Naylor is gone. Shuhei Takahashi is gone, injured. Maybe some of them guys are going to come back, but how has that changed the team with the injuries?
Injuries are always tough. That's why the team's got to be ready for that. That's going to come every year. Somebody's going to get hurt. So that's tough. We need that bat. We need that pitching from Naylor. We need that bat from Shuhei. So, but we got to hang in there and wait for him to come back. And we got to do the best we can to win games until he comes back.
All right, well, good luck. We're watching.
All right, thank you for inviting me.
All right, so, this was I guess you heard it. I sound Japanese, so I'm going to quit Spanish. I learned Spanish a little bit before I learned any Japanese, so I'm going to quit the language. I used to live in Southern California where most of the time you hear a lot of Spanish, so I thought it was good, so I'm quitting. It's official.
Oh, mucho gusto.
Great. Now I get the gringo like you coming back at me with a mucho gusto. What caught you here, buddy?
Okay. I really enjoyed this, and I think at first he gets on a roll. You know, he got on a roll, and it started with, you know, stay fit, you know, fitness issues. But I think two things I really enjoyed. One is he has this attitude of the game is what it is.
The game in Japan or just
yes,
in general?
The game in Japan is what it is. You learn about the game, you listen, you be observant. It's your business. Take care of business. Right. So he's really serious about, you know, I love the part, you know, what did you do when you were hurt? It's like, I kept going over in my mind, what do I need to do to be better in Japan? And then he throws out all these little, but I think really interesting little observations, you know, talking about the adjustments with the coaches.
I thought that was brilliant. Yeah.
Talking about the training staff, talking about the way people pitch him, what he needs to do to adapt to Japanese baseball. I mean, there are all these little nuggets in there. But to me, you know, sum it up is to be observant, you know, to learn. It's all about learning as much as you can and adapting. So I really like that. That was kind of interesting to me. And now the other thing that I really liked was his, and he didn't use the word dichotomy, you know, but the dichotomy of having to be disciplined in waiting for a good pitch and then at the same time being fearless in attacking it. Now, this is, you know, when he's talking about Dion Viciedo.
Uh-huh.
How, you know, you have to be patient because these guys are going to try to get you out of the zone. And here's Viciedo going swing, swing, swing. And everybody else is like going, okay, I can swing too. I don't have to be too patient. I don't have to be too disciplined. I can be aggressive on pitches that I like, you know, I don't want to stay back too much. And he talked about that sort of ebb and flow in the approach. was really interesting to me. Of course, and he's right, you have to wait for your pitch. And I believe actually that Andrew Jones will come back to Japan if somebody guarantees that he'll throw that pitch that Andrew's been waiting for since 2013.
Stop it.
Hashtag high heat.
But, you know, and I say that because every time you talk to him, he says, well, have you seen your pitch? No.
No, and that's why he drew a lot of walks.
2014, he was still looking for that one pitch.
And then also saw a lot of strikes. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I guess the thing that really stood out for me was the fact that, and it's no surprise for me either, that Motonobu Tanishige, the skipper, is a sharp-eyed, shark-tongued critic of his players.
Yeah.
And, you know, that he said that he wouldn't let anything go by. Anything that he sees, you're going to hear about. And, you know, obviously, I asked him about the communication. What I was looking for was, how does he tell you how he's going to be using you? How does he tell you when he's going to take you out of games? And obviously, Ricardo's fine with all that stuff, with all the defensive replacement things that are happening. If they pinch run for him, he's fine with all that stuff. And that's because of the communication. And you can tell that's it's in place. There's a system. There is a plan. And you can tell a little bit that. And I like that. But I, you know, the perfectionist that Tanishige is and the enforcer that I get the sense that he is, and you could tell when he was catching games, especially late in his career, these last 3-4 years, he was controlling the whole infield. He was in control of everything, and you know, guys made mistakes on the mound and made mistakes with their pitches, but he was always thinking and trying to get them through it, and now that's all he has to do. And so now, since that's all he has to do and he doesn't have to do game preparation, that he's really, really strict. I get the idea that, you know, he said he doesn't let anything go by. Ricardo said he doesn't let anything go by, so I can really get that picture of how disciplinarian this guy is. And that's probably why we're seeing this team, probably, if you ask me, overachieve a little bit. I mean, some injuries. They've got injuries all through the rotation and on the mound, and they've got some injuries. We still haven't heard when Shuhei Takahashi is going to be back. So I think they're kind of still overachieving, if you ask me.
Well, you're not going to get any arguments from me. I did sort of expect them to be middle of the pack somewhere. So yeah, Tanishige, that was that. I guess I should have mentioned that, but I have been intrigued with how the new managers are working this year, and that was certainly interesting. That, and I guess also the one. I guess it was telling because he used the word when he talked about getting sort of instructions or tips from the bench,
right? Yeah,
or from the coaches. I'm guessing that one of the batting. Now I don't know the Dragons' coaching setup, but I'm guessing one of the batting coaches is a base coach.
Those are the guys who are tipping him off or saying, hey, you need to watch out for this.
Yeah, giving him like, okay, watch for this or this was that or something. They're trying to do this to you or something.
Well,
I think that would be the most obvious.
Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, in at bat, not in game, but in at bat, adjustments that the coaches are helping him make. And so, yeah, I would imagine it's either the bench
or the first base, because I know Hidenori is not a batting coach.
Yeah.
Well, at least I hope he's
we hope he's not, because he'd be teaching people how to take balls. So, yeah, I thought that was great. And I thought, you know, you touched on it a second ago about how he said he was in shape, but he wasn't in good enough shape for this league.
Yep.
And we hear guys, I think it was Brian Bogusevic earlier this year of the Oryx Buffaloes who talked about trying not to wear himself out, keeping up with these guys. And to hear Ricardo say, you know, he was in good shape, but he wasn't in good enough shape for this league.
Yeah, there's good shape, there's baseball shape, and there's NPB shape.
And they're all different shapes and sizes, I believe. So,
indeed they are.
So that was interesting. So if you want to talk about the Dragons now, yeah, I think obviously they're doing better than a lot of people expected. I remember just about everybody had them in last place during the prediction show. I did too. Who was the one person who didn't? You had the Dragons finishing fourth.
Yeah, middle of the pack, as I thought. So, yeah. Okay. Well, again, and that it was nothing to do with their personnel. It was all about, you know, what teams in their positions and of their age and attributes generally do. So it was pretty dispassionate.
Right.
So my surprise, I'm not surprised. I think I picked them fourth last year as well, to be honest. But or even third. I picked him higher last year.
Yeah. Well, they are struggling. I mean, the personnel is an issue. They are struggling with some injuries. Yosuke Hirata, the captain, he's battling through injuries. He keeps missing starts here and there and getting rest, but he's fairly productive. And then
he's a very productive player. I mean, he's really developed sort of late in the game the last couple of years. So
that's true. And you and I were at Tokyo Dome. We did talk to Hidenori about.
No, I laughed. You and he were talking and enjoying your company. I was sitting there enjoying the conversation that you guys were having.
But we did talk about. Actually, we did talk that day about Nanita and how he had really devoted himself to the game in the off season and came back in better shape and all that stuff. And then when I went out to Sabre Dome and talked to Nanita, I also talked to Francis Ruiz, the bullpen coach and slash translator. And I think he wears a lot of caps for that team. But we were talking about some of the pitchers, and I said, what about this kid, Shinnosuke Ogasawara? He's got a name that is made for MVP.
Sure.
And, dude. Anyway, he lost a game the other day, and he showed some potential to me. And I asked him, I said, this kid, he's like the left-handed Shunta Wakamatsu. He just throws change-ups and fastballs.
Mm.
And, Francis said, well, he's got a curve and he's got a slider. And I said, well, he's not throwing them for strikes, so he's not keeping guys off of his stuff. He's a five and dive guy, but it takes him 100 and something pitches to get through the five innings. So if he throws those curves and sliders over the plate and he develops that secondary stuff, I think he's going to be killer, because once in a while he busts out a fastball that just surprises guys up there. They don't really see the speed coming. So they've been struggling with that. Obviously when Takahashi went down at third, that was a problem. And I was talking to the Chunichi Soul blogger on Twitter, and we discussed their options at third, and we've seen all those guys come out so far and play, and none of them has been an actual replacement for them. So I also asked Hidenori that day when I went out to talk to Nanita, I said, why don't you guys on your roster have a guy you can use for the DH during this period of time, even if he doesn't do anything but maybe hit one or two home runs for you? You got a DH during the interleague play. And he says, Yeah, I don't know. We don't have players like that in our system. Mm. I'm like, I'm saying, yeah, get one. Hello.
Yeah, let me call up the Chunichi Shimbun and order one. We'd like 6 monthly subscriptions and a DH, please.
Yes, please. To go.
That's right. Deliver them to the next PL park. That's where we'll be.
I've seen a lot of problems with their rotation that has been shaky. Jordan Noberto, he's the stopper now. He's pitched four times three times with three-game losing streaks and one time with a four-game losing streak, and he's won them all. And we talked Wakamatsu, I didn't think that was that great last year. He just was able to locate, and this year he hasn't been able to locate as well consistently.
Well, that's the whole thing. He tells me that he gets he'll get games where he surprises people with his fastball so often that he thinks he can throw it.
Not that thing.
No. You know, and it was when I'll tell you, his changeup is so good that he just needs a break. You know, so he needs the coach saying, hey, no fastballs, not now. Hold on to it, son. You'll want to save that for a little later. But I do like him. He's a good guy. He's a very smart kid. So.
Yeah, and they took two out of three from the Fighters in this weekend series at the end of Interleague, and I thought that was kind of impressive because I figured they weren't going to beat Shohei Ohtani on Sunday. I didn't think they thought they were going to win, but they brought one of their best pitchers, Kazuki Yoshimiya, out for that on Sunday. They still didn't get it done, but. They were close, and they tried to come back in the ninth inning. But, this is a team you don't see it usually beating itself with mental mistakes.
Right.
On occasion, I mean, you've got young players out there, and they're learning. So on occasion, right, that happens. But, Tanishige has been really, like I said, he's been really strict. And you see these guys, at least they're thinking on their feet. They know where they have a plan. They know what to do defensively. And I can tell you, I want to tell you this, Masahiro Araki at second base, even though I don't think he's going to get to that 2,000 hit plateau this season, he has really been playing some really strong second base. I joked with him the other day. I said, you're 40 what? And he says, I'm 39.
Sounds like him. I'm going to cut in here and say something that I don't really see how it happened. But the Dragons, you know, I was just looking up some numbers, poking around, you know, what's up with the Dragons. And the thing that caught my eye was opposing balls, batting average on balls in play is 290. That's the second best in NPB.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming. But what I did see coming last year was I was impressed last year with a lot of the young players they gave playing time to.
Mm.
But I was also – I also noticed that they made a lot of base running errors. They're very aggressive on the bases. And on the other hand, they were very – they sort of were tuned into that game, you know, taking – exploiting opportunities as many opportunities they could on the bases. But on the other hand, also being aware of what other teams were trying – when other teams were trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think they've tightened that up a bit. I see them being a little less fewer self-inflicted wounds on the bases.
Ah, right. Yeah.
And a little better defense all around. It seems like this team is sort of maturing, you know, coming together, you know, sort of naturally. The guys are getting used to being up there. The guys are getting used to playing with each other because things are working. You know, the pitching – you didn't mention Raul Valdez, who has been quite good most of the time.
Yep. I didn't mention everybody, yeah.
No, but the point being that the things have been working. The things they have been trying to do haven't. They've been inconsistent, but they've been working often enough that in this league, they could easily make the playoffs.
Yeah. And one other thing, I did talk to the beat writer. And I was asking him about Viciedo because Viciedo...
It's awful lonely being the Dragons beat writer.
Okay. It's awfully lonely being the Swallows beat writer. But,
okay. There's only one?
I don't know. There's only one win a week.
Hashtag high heat.
Anyway, I asked him about Viciedo because he had the really fast start and he, after about a month, he slowed down a little bit. And there was one game... one series in there because he beat the brains out of the Tigers early on. And Tomoaki Kanemoto, the first year skipper of the Tigers, said that he thought he noticed something in that Viciedo was missing breaking pitches that drop straight down.
Okay.
Not off speed pitches like sliders that break to the side, but ones like curveballs or changeups that just drop.
Basically curveballs. Yeah, 12-6 curves. Yeah.
And so I noticed it. A lot of pitchers have been throwing him breaking pitches, and I mean right down the middle, but they've been sinking straight down, and he's been missing some of those. And that's, they stopped throwing him fastballs essentially, only to try to trick him or make him chase at fastballs, but they're not throwing him for strikes. So that's part of the reason that he has slowed down. Remember early on, I said he was swinging at everything, but he was making good contact, and he stopped making good contact. So, but they, again, you're right. They could finish. I said at one point, and this, of course, was early on in Interleague, that they're starting to look like a last-place team. But, you know, the pitching as well as they've been able to do, and they did pick up recently, added a Dominican pitcher named Layson Septimo.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lefty. And we'll probably see him fairly soon because that's been it. It's just that there's rotation. It really hasn't been a rotation. They've been, Valdez would throw on short rest, and then they deactivated him the other day to give him long rest. So, I mean, it's just they're just jumbling everything up, and it's very inconsistent, and still they're in the chase. But they're a little bit under 500 now, and I think when we get into the second half, if they continue this kind of choppy rotation, that it's just not going to work out.
Okay. Surprisingly enough, third in the Central League in scoring. That's always a shock to me.
Yeah, that is a surprise.
Because, well, I mean, it shouldn't be a shock. I mean, it's a shock because we have this expectation of the Dragons as being a poor offensive team. When that's kind of a recent thing. I mean, all throughout the previous decade, they were in the middle of the pack little better than average in run production, you know, playing in the, you know, in the worst pitcher's park in the world. And people thought their pitching was good. So no, it's to some degree, that's a park illusion. So their offense is actually pretty good. And of course, despite that, they have the honor of being the best sacrificing team in the Central League, or I should say the most frequent sacrificing team. You know, the Tanishige's one up on Yoshinobu Takahashi for that title.
Or yeah, but remember, he's still partially sharing a brain with Hiromitsu Ochiai in that, hey, if we don't give up any runs, we can't lose. And if we just get one, we can win. And I'm like, not with that rotation, you can't, and not with that bullpen. Although the bullpen was a weakness early on, I think it has actually turned into a strength for them. Tajima has really been good for them. He gave up the one. He gave up a home run to Brandon Laird during that series over the weekend, but he has basically really been good. He's only given up two runs this whole season, so that's not bad for him. So. All right, you want to move on and make a seamless transition and talk about Interleague? And surprise, surprise, you got it right. We can't say the winner of the Interleague.
Yes, we can.
We have to say, yes, we you and I can, but we can't say it.
Officially there's not a winner anymore.
There's not a winner anymore.
The
team that finishes with the best winning percentage and the team that finishes on top of the standings. And sometimes that happens to be the same team. Oh.
I know. Well, you know, as I said, I think the reason a couple of years ago, the reason the Central League would like, you know, it used to be their logic for reducing the Interleague games was to get more fans in the seats. And now the reason for reducing Interleague games is so that the fans who do come to the games will watch their favorite teams get their brains beat in less often.
They have more to cheer about, essentially.
Essentially, they got a better chance. You know, they got a better chance playing against the Carp than the Pacific League.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So I was close. I picked the Marines to finish on top in the standings, and you picked the Hawks, and you won by mere percentage points.
Yeah, baby.
Both teams had 12 wins, but the Marines had a 7-game win streak there, and did pretty well at the end. So they struggled at times in the middle, but they did pretty well at the end. And then all of a sudden, the Carp got hot, and Seiya Suzuki, oh my goodness. You know, I joked on Twitter, and I saw your little note today, and I jabbed you about that one. But I said, man, this guy must have sold his soul. He is he had walk-off home runs on back-to-back days or in back-to-back games, won a night game in less than 24 hours.
Right. You know?
And then he hits the game-winning home run on Sunday today.
Yeah.
What a weekend for that guy.
Yeah. Well, again, as I said on Twitter, you know, Suzuki doesn't surprise me because of what he's done in the past. This guy is a quality hitter. I mean, this guy is a real quality hitter. That was fairly obvious a year ago. Then the one that got me, however, was Ryuma Kitokoro. This is a guy. He's got like 1,300 minor league plate appearances.
Uh-huh. And 1,300.
Yes. 1,300 minor league plate appearances in the Western League. And he's in the minor leagues. He's a career 236 hitter. In those 1,277, I believe, plate appearances, he has 20 home runs.
Right.
In the minors.
In the minors.
He came up this year, I think he had about 400 career at-bats, and he was primarily a pinch runner. 31 years old, he had one home run. He was a 209 hitter. And now, you know, he's making Shohei Ohtani look kind of wimpy.
Yeah. Through Saturday's games, he was hitting 408 and had 4 home runs, and then he had 2 hits on Sunday and hit another home run. So that's 5 during interleague play alone.
Yeah. Do they still have the interleague MVP? Because he hit that grand slam today. So he's the guy. So I did not seeing John's eloquent post about Seiya Suzuki. I tried to steal his.
Oh, now you're claiming you didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
And you say it so emphatically, like you actually didn't see it. You read my Twitter feed all the time. Come on, man. What happened was it seeped into your brain when you weren't really paying attention and you forgot that you saw it. That's what's happening.
I had 2 days off and I pretty much didn't watch any baseball for 2 days. So, no, I wasn't watching. I kind of half watched one game and, you know, I was catching up on, you know, trying not to end up like Rick Vandenhoek, you know, on the fatigue list. And
I'll never be there. Never. I never get tired of watching baseball.
Okay. Well, good on you, man.
Settle down, Spunky, he says.
those weren't the words that would come to mind, but the gist is there nonetheless. So the Interleague was fairly predictable.
Yeah, unfortunately, again, this is the 12th year.
Mm-hmm.
And 11 of those years, the Pacific League has finished with a better overall record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the Giants have won
twice,
and that's it.
Yep.
I can't remember. I shouldn't even.
Yep.
Twice
is correct.
Twice, and that's it. They're the only Central League team to have ever won. Right. The Carps' third place finish this year is great for this Central League, and it was really unexpected.
Well, here's the question. Which Pacific League teams have never won?
I know this one. The Lions.
Correct.
And the Eagles.
Correct. Good man. Good man.
All right. Are you going to bring back trivia?
Yeah. No, they're going to be honorary Central League teams next year.
Well, not the way the Eagles played at Yokohama over the weekend.
True enough. But the Buffaloes could be.
The Buffaloes.
They're vying for promotion to the Central League.
It was a play-in series, and they played their way in.
Hashtag high heat.
So, it was a really fun interleague session. I really enjoyed watching Shohei Ohtani today, especially he finished off his, and we're going to talk about him a little bit later, but he finished off his pitching and batting sequences as the in the Central League parks with a 8-inning shutout stint today against the Dragons. Just 12 strikeouts. I predicted he was going to throw a no hitter, and then Diane Viciado got a hit early on in the game in the first inning, and I said, okay, well, it'll be a one hitter, and then somebody else got a hit, but that was it.
yeah, he didn't two hitter, but you were right with the two hitter prediction.
Well, just got the day wrong.
Yeah, and he also, I was impressed with him. He did, he did some damage to himself with a ball he fouled off his leg.
Yeah.
And then he issued his first walk, or his walk right after that. But he kind of got over it. I'm going, man, this guy is tough. Yeah. Kuriyama was thinking, I'm going to have to take this guy out of the game. And it's, here he's back in the batter's box. And I'm thinking, he's looked like he was going to be out of the game again. And here he is back on the mound. And whoa, 100. He's like going, I think I'll forget the 163 today. I'll be fine. He was living at 153 very happily today.
Yeah, he knew that's all he needed to beat the Dragons. But he had a
disappointment.
Hit.
Come on, let's.
No, I enjoyed watching him. I knew
it's a heck of a
it's
game.
One of those games I thought I knew what the outcome was going to be. It was just kind of surprising that he's the one who in the sixth inning he drew a walk with two outs.
Mm-hmm.
And then he scores on a double by Brandon Laird. So that was after he had fouled that ball off his leg and he had to do all that running. And I jokingly tweeted because Laird made an out running on the bases.
He did. He was run down second and third.
So Ohtani had to come right back out to the mound. Well, somebody, I think, feigned an injury so that they could give him a little bit more time to rest because he was sitting on the bench huffing and puffing.
Mm.
And I thought that was a great strategy. I mean, and it's fun. And then you think, he's going to go out to the mound and maybe suffer a little bit, and he throws a 1-2-3 inning. So
yeah, no, but there was some suffering out there, but it was all from the Dragons side.
Right. So he had a hit and walked twice, scored a run, had an RBI, and pitched 8 innings of shutout ball. I love this kid.
it's really hard not to like him, and he's a real straightforward guy. Tells you, answers questions. He's pretty upfront, pretty unassuming. Really easy to like.
Okay.
He's like the anti-Wakui.
who won a game the other day and pitched really great. And, you know, I thought he might smile by accident, but no. Not even at all. No. Am I alive? Somebody poke me with a stick. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about Ichiro Suzuki once again this year. Once again in this episode, back-to-back episodes, he passed Pete Rose for the mythical world hit title. Is that how's that?
Yeah, he leads the world in mythical hits.
No, he owns the mythical world hit title.
What's mythical about it?
It doesn't exist.
Well, officially. I think officially.
The World League does not exist.
Exactly. I think that's the way you put it now is pretty much the issue here.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting one, and I think a lot of people touched on it and got to the heart of the matter, which is it's a hugely amazing number.
Exactly.
And it's incredibly impressive. And, you know, the world is big. And this is the thing. And I think the issue is that MLB records used to be everything. And they're not anymore.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think if it were that case, nobody would be talking about it.
I have a couple of theories. But first, I want to discuss this and then we'll get to that. I really think what we're missing here is why Japan was making a big deal about it in the first place.
Oh, I don't think we're missing that part.
Bear with me.
Oh, okay. I will. Go ahead.
Make this point. Okay. Isao Harimoto has 3,085 hits. That's the most in MPB history. And it's a number that Ichiro would have easily surpassed had he stayed in Japan and played his career here.
Sure.
Okay. Pete Rose has the number in MLB, 4,256.
Right.
Ichiro's never going to break that record.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it, Ichiro's absolute brilliance is something Japan wanted to celebrate.
Of course.
But you can't do it if he doesn't own a hit record here and he doesn't own a hit record in the United States. So it was the Japanese media that brought up, okay, well, look, if you put his hits together, he's going to have this hit total.
Well,
they wanted to celebrate that
for Ichiro. They've been doing that since the war.
I know they didn't. And they didn't. But my point is they're celebrating that aspect.
Mm.
And that became a narrative. That became a topic that kind of grew legs even in the United States.
Well, see, that's the point. And that's the point, I think, where, okay, you're not wrong about the Japanese media wanting something to write about. Because, you know, that's what we do. We find things to write about, even if they're of no interest to anybody.
Or celebrate.
Right. And sometimes they stick, you know. You're going to throw it at the wall and see what sticks. But here's the thing, and I think you rightly said, it had legs. Now, the question is, why does it have legs? And this is the important part. Why are people in the U.S. talking about it, even though it's something that came completely out of left field for them? You know, why are people saying, wow, wait, you know, they're going, wow, that's a lot of hits. And wow, you know, if you think about it, because I in my mind, if you had said this 20 years ago or 30 years, somebody would have said, they would have said, you know, the attitude would have been the attitude of the major league players in Fukuoka in November 2000 when they heard the news that the Seattle Mariners had just paid $13 million to negotiate with Ichiro Suzuki,
mm-hmm.
who wasn't on playing in that tour because he broke his arm when he was hit by a pitch about 10 days from the end of that season. So he didn't play in that series. Okay, now this is a series in which the Japanese did quite well, but they were basically hooting and hollering and guffawing, and they were taking it like, you know, the Seattle Mariners have completely lost their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Because no player without major league experience could be worth $13 million to negotiate with, because that was the thinking. And, you know, 20 years, obviously things have changed. And so I think this story had legs because largely to a degree, largely because of Ichiro, but also largely because, you know, of the internet and the fact that people are more knowledgeable. You know, $155 million for a Japanese pitcher who's never pitched in the major leagues. And you don't hear people saying, like Reggie Jackson did when Irabu went over there, well, he didn't face Juan Gonzalez in Japan, therefore we shouldn't, he's not worth anything. We shouldn't think he's any good because he pitched in Japan. It's not the majors. That whole attitude has shrunk into its rightful place, which is, I think, where it is now, which is, this is the major league record, but what Ichiro did is a phenomenal accomplishment. It's not the record, but it's pretty gosh darn amazing.
Well, that's my point. I think I think this achievement will just float away in limbo because he won't ever be the hits leader in Japan, and he won't be the hits leader in the major leagues.
And he'll have he ain't gonna float away because he's gonna be in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right. And they'll probably put on his plaque that he had 4,000 and X number of hits.
Sure.
And that's it. But my point is Japan wanted to celebrate the fact that he had gotten more hits than any other Japanese player who ever lived. And they wanted to celebrate that. That was my thinking.
No, I think your point is accurate, but I was intrigued by, you know, the people in America who wanted to talk about what happened in Japan and the value of the hits in Japan. And to me, that's the huge part of the story, is that people are beginning to get it, that baseball is not MLB.
Yeah.
Baseball is not equivalent to MLB. I mean, people were saying, obviously you heard somebody say, well, how do we deal with somebody like Sadaharu Oh? And I said, well, that's a great question. Talk about it. Okay, talk about it. And I'm not saying there is no right answer. Okay. And Pete Rose came out, and I thought, you know, other than some of the language, what he said was essentially correct. He's the major league hit record. Yeah, I mean, yeah, no question. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when somebody said, well, Ichiro has more pro hits, Pete Rose trotted out, hey, I had 280 or I had 345 hits in the minors. I've got more pro hits. Good point. Okay, well, Ichiro had, hold on a second here, he had 156 hits in the minors. So Pete Rose is about 200 hits ahead of Ichiro right now. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Okay.
Okay, Ichiro, go get those 200 hits, man.
Well, here's another thing. I mean, I did have some opinion or have an opinion about Mr. Rose's attitude, but I think it just stems from the fact that Ichiro is a surefire Hall of Famer in both, obviously in both MLB and here in Japan.
Mm.
And Pete Rose might posthumously be added to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And so I think there's just, you know, why are we talking about this guy? He doesn't have my record, and he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame if I'm not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, Rose is saying, you know, he should be in the Hall of Fame. He will be in the Hall of Fame. He's an amazing player. So, you know, that's really a turnaround for Pete Rose. I wonder if he hired Barry Bonds' publicist when he started saying stupid stuff as he used to. But no, you know, good. And people are talking about it, which to me is very interesting.
I did see some fans, and we ran it in our newspaper. It was a great picture with a great poster held up by some fans that said, Pete Rose is the hit king, Ichiro is the hit emperor. Just respect both.
I like that. And yeah. Alex Rodriguez had a great line. My buddy, Henri Uechi, who's our Kyoto reporter who covers the Yankees, I asked him if he could get some quotes from Joe Girardi and Alex Rodriguez for our Ichiro story, and he got some. And Alex Rodriguez said, so what do you think about Pete and Ichiro? He said, I don't want to get Pete angry with me. So, but then he said, look, you know, if Pete says this, you got to listen. If Ichiro does this, you got to listen, because they're legends, and you don't doubt legends.
Speaking of legends, did you hear the presser Ichiro had and the like Michael Jordan Hall of Fame speech kind of comments that he threw out there?
I did not. Oh, a few of them. You mean after that game in San Diego?
Yes, after the game in San Diego, yes.
No, I did hear a bit of it, at least some of it, yes.
Essentially, he said, you know, neighbors, when he was growing up as a kid, scoffed at the idea that he would play pro baseball, and he said, I pulled that off.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I had doubters emerge when I wanted to jump to the big leagues,
mm-hmm.
and I've been successful at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then his face got really, really serious, dead serious. And he says, I want to play until I'm 50. And he looked, I mean, he looked as if he's talking directly to the people who are doubting him.
Mm.
He says, I'm going to do it. So, wow. So take that.
Almost I feel like the time Barry Bonds looked at me and said, you know, he was talking to media at Tokyo Dome, also in 2000 after that same series. And he said, anybody got any questions? And he said, looked at me and said, except you. So maybe Ichiro was looking at me and saying, hey, you said I was too old 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think I did too. So, yeah, obviously he's raised a lot of conversation. He's obviously raising the profile of MPB. Yeah. Every player who goes over there, I think, does, but especially guys who are able to last this long. And I think it's work ethic that you see. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you see the work ethic and the stretching that he does. One of my nicknames for him, I remember, I don't know if you remember.
How can I forget, John?
In the early days of NHK, they didn't show commercials. They had the camera fixed on Ichiro during the commercial breaks. And this guy would stretch in between innings while he was out there in the outfield. So I just called him Stretchito instead of Ichiro. And that was one of my nicknames for him. And he still is that guy. He stretches. And I saw his pregame routine. The guy stretches. He stretches his hair. He stretches everything. I mean, anything on his body, he stretches before the game. In this two-hour regimen. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. If you know Gumby, yeah, you know Ichiro.
All right. Well, congratulations to him on that feat, and we will look for him to be playing with a team, sign another contract so that he can play until he's 50. All right. Making a two-seam transition, we'll talk about home plate crashes and burnings that are going on in the here in Japan. Now, we had a situation in Hiroshima on Tuesday, I believe it was, a walk-off situation, sort of. It's more like a talk-off. I was calling it a talk-off game instead of a walk-off game.
Yeah, they basically decided the game in the back room. smoke-filled room.
All right, so we've got another situation, a play at the plate, and the Carp had the runner actually called out at the plate, and then
the final out in the ninth inning,
and it was going to look like we were going to extra innings in a 2-2 game, and then the umpires came out and said, No, we're going to invoke the collision rule. The catcher was stepping on third base on the line, maybe, or covering the plate or something, but he didn't have a pathway.
Tatsuyuki Uemoto had his leg stretched across the third base line, which is a no-no.
Yeah.
When he had the ball, mind you, but that's the way the rules work.
Okay. And I was watching this live, and as soon as I saw it and saw the replay, I thought, well, you know, this is all good. But the problem that I'm seeing is we've got enough for these umpires to make a call when there is no home plate or collision situation involved. They're blowing calls. And one of the reasons they're making these mistakes on these calls is it's hard to watch and see if the catcher is actually catching the ball and making a tag and if the runner is actually touching the base, all these things. And to watch and see if somebody's standing in the wrong spot is just too much for them.
That's the first one. That's the part that happens before is the catcher in the way. I mean, that's sort of like, here comes the runner. That's no longer an issue.
And I think we talked about it before when we talked about the fact that what is the base path and is the runner running out of the base path. I think there's a little bit of playroom, and that playroom, that window for interpretation for them to have to make a judgment call is does the ball take the catcher into the path?
Right.
Or does it not? And for that, they can't see all that stuff in one split second. It's just not going to happen.
Right. I'll go with you there. I think and as far as the area for interpretation, now the rule, as usual in Japan, the rule is fairly basic. And then, and this is like in Japanese law, the rules tend to be very vague in Japanese law. The laws tend to be very vague, and the government will apply an official interpretation. This is a way you can radically alter the way you govern without actually having to go through all the trouble of rewriting the laws. We're just going to interpret this differently today. So now, you know, the rule says you must keep the base path open. You cannot be in the base path unless the ball carries you there. And then you cannot remain there unless the runner is there at that instant. Okay, so those the rules are fairly basic. You can't go after the catcher. You can't run out of the baseline. Okay, very basic, very simple. Now, the interpretation, the next level of interpretation, the officially written down interpretation is this. The runner's path is defined as a strip basically 6.5 inches on the foul side of the third baseline.
Never enforced.
And home plate, okay, including home plate. The runner has to be, in order, the simple test of whether the base or the baseline or home plate is being obstructed is if the runner does not have the option to either slide or score standing up. Now, this was the one that killed the Hanshin Tigers a month and a half ago, because the catcher was over the plate. There was room to slide, but they had already said that he has to be able to stand up. Right. So, okay.
We discussed that one too on the show.
Correct. Right? Okay. So that, so now the one interpretation John mentioned is, does he have the ball in the line? Does the ball carry him into the line, which happens. And that's pretty, I think that's fair enough. But again, the umpire has a lot to do. And here's the other one, which they've left wide open, and they say, we don't really have a consensus on this, is they tacked on another rule onto the – this is the level two of the interpretation – that if the catcher has the ball well in advance of the runner and the runner is going to be obviously out, the rule will not be enforced.
How many times have we seen that?
Right. And, you know, actually the first time the rule was enforced – that was obviously the case, because the Cebu Lions pitcher Kona Takahashi was the one where he had the ball on. It was the first one where the rule was invoked.
Okay.
And Kona Takahashi threw a wild pitch. The runner from second is scoring. He's standing on home plate waiting for the ball, which was okay because Brandon Laird scored standing up right past him, so that was okay. And now he gets the ball, and he advances toward the runner. Now get this. He gets the ball, and he's advancing up the third baseline toward the runner, which tells you what?
Plenty of time to get
it. Exactly. Exactly. He's got plenty of time, but then the umpire says, no, you can't be in the baseline advancing up the runner. You know, so that's that last one is the one, and this is the one the Tigers had trouble with too. Of course, the Tigers argued that A, the throw took their catcher into the base path, and then he was there with plenty of time to make the out.
Yeah, there's a lot of gobbledygook in
there is indeed in these so rules. They're making it up pretty much as they go along. So I thought the one against Uemoto in that resulted in the video off win.
The talk off win.
Oh, I like that.
Because the umpire says the game's over.
Exactly. I like that. And the one the next day in which the Hawks catcher basically did the same thing. His leg wasn't as far across the baseline, but it was in the baseline. His cleats were there, touching home plate and in the baseline. The umpire said, "Nah, I don't think so." So. That was, to me, strange because it violated what they're actually saying is the rule. So, but there is interpretation and there is a lot of variance here. Yeah, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I you know, and the one thing about the Hiroshima thing, we got to get off this topic and move on. But it took 10 minutes for them to decide this. And I thought, you know, obviously,
right,
Uemoto is standing on the third baseline. There's no doubt about it. And I was watching, as I said, I was watching it live, and there was one angle on the TV feed that I saw where I thought the catcher missed the tag. And I thought that they were looking to see if there was no tag made, and so that they could, just in case there was no tag made, that they could come out and say, hey, look, we didn't see a tag, so the runner's safe, so that they didn't have to apply the rule.
I think you're right right about that. But I hadn't thought about that because to me, it was so obvious that he was breaking the rule that it took me like like 2 seconds to figure out, oh, they're just going to call him safe. And why is it taking them 10 minutes?
Right. So they have a lot of problems. I hope they, in the offseason, it gets tweaked and something happens, because it's really making people uncomfortable. And we're getting guys who are being called safe who should be out. And it's really messing up some of the games, especially the close ones. So I don't want to see teams go down. I mean, when you make a good play, you should be rewarded for that with an out. So a couple of notes. Kosuke Fukudome of the Hanshin Tigers is approaching 2,000 hits combined in MLB and mostly NPB. Mm. And he's going to earn a Golden Players Club jacket, and he'll be the second guy in NPB this year behind Takahiro Arai to reach that plateau, Arai of the Carp. But I don't know what to do with this guy. I remember him coming up with the Dragons, and he's a guy who sat out a year so that he could choose the team to go to.
Right, he was drafted out of high school, and he was drafted by the Kintetsu Buffaloes.
Okay, and he said no.
Yeah, Kintetsu. He was drafted by the Kintetsu Buffaloes. He didn't want to play for them. He was only going to go to the Giants or Dragons or Tigers.
And so then he chose the Dragons, and he joined them, and he was highly touted, and he was going to play shortstop for them, but he was so awful defensively that he couldn't actually play short. And I don't want to say awful.
He had hard hands.
He was inconsistent. Yeah. And so he needed to find another position, and they moved him all over the place. I remember he lost a game, and I don't want to say he lost a series, but he lost the 1999, helped lose the 1999 Japan series when he made an error at third base, and he wasn't really good there, and they put him in the outfield, and eventually he learned to play the outfield, and he has become a really good outfielder. He's a decent corner outfielder now. He's a really sweet swinging player. I remember when he came up, that swing, I just thought, oh man, although he couldn't hit off-speed pitches to save his life for a long time. And so he's made a lot of adjustments. He has come a long way. But I don't know if he's Hall of Fame worthy.
Well, 2000 is really, 2000 ain't 3000, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
In the major leagues, 3000 and you're in the Hall of Fame. It's a very small club. 2000's a huge club in Japan. It's sort of like when you get to 2,000 hits, you get Christmas cards from the Hall of Fame. when you got to get 2,000 some hundreds and do something else. So no, not yet. But he's, if he can keep playing like he is now, like he played last year for a couple of years, until he's about 38, 39. He was really good last year. He's been pretty good this year.
Yep.
He was awkward coming back into NPB, but he's good. He was a very, very good player, and I think he'll be deserving, but he needs and I say he'll be deserving because there was a period of time when he was, easily one of the best players in Japan, though he got hurt right in the middle of that. He broke his arm, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurt his peak value. But he was also he had some great moments in baseball. He had a huge home run in the WBC that got Japan past South Korea in the semifinals in 2006.
Yep.
Just a really great career. I think he's had the quality of a career that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame if it goes a little longer.
Yeah, I think eventually he gets in. Yeah. All right, Shohei Ohtani, and this we taped last week on Sunday morning, so we didn't get to mention the fact that he had this 163-kilometer fastball on parade performance through five times. He hit that mark that was June 12th at Sapporo Dome against the Tigers.
Yeah, he had 31 pitches 100 miles an hour.
Wow. And 7 innings and a 6-0 shutout, had 8 strikeouts then. And obviously I mentioned earlier what he did on Sunday this week with the 12 strikeouts and 8 innings against Chunichi. So awesome.
Just to mention, he finished interleague. He batted twice with the DH. As a starting pitcher in the batting order, Shohei Ohtani is now. He started the season 2-for-10 with a double. He is now a .333 hitter with 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, 3 runs, 3 RBIs. Let that guy hit. And now I was asking Masanori Murakami about him the other day, and Murakami's name came up a couple of weeks ago because he was the first Nippon Ham Fighters pitcher to bat after the DH rule.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me he was a they used him twice as a pinch hitter because at Caracuan Stadium they kind of had a short short distances down the line where the fighters played, and he used to take BP a lot, and he used to pull a bunch of them into the seats right at the foul pole.
Uh-huh.
His manager said, hey, why don't you pinch hit? So he did twice, and he hit a bullet to first base, and he struck out. So that was his career. But he was telling me while we were on the topic, you know, I was talking to manager Kuriyama a while back, and I was bugging him. I was saying, look, you know you're hurting your team. And he said, what? He says, you're letting a DH bat, you're letting your worst DH bat when Ohtani pitches. What's wrong with you?
Right.
So what you do is you bat him fifth, and if you need to use him as a pinch hitter, it means you're losing the game anyway. So, yeah, why not let him do it?
Makes sense.
Okay.
All right, and one other note. On Friday, Tetsuto Yamada hit his, at that time, MPB leading 22nd homer, and that gave him home runs against all 11 teams in a single season.
Wow.
And that's the 17th time that that's happened. He's the 15th player to do it, and he's the first Japanese Yakult player to do it.
Okay.
And then I guess he hit number 23 today.
He did. So now he's actually leading both leagues.
All right. Let's go to fielding questions. The first one is an MP3 from Jet Boy Max.
Hi, JBW Podcast. My question for you today is, what is the minimum age requirement for high school players in Japan going into the professional draft? Would Waseda's Kotaro Semiya be drafted in this offseason or in 2017? Thanks for your answer.
All right, thank you for that, Jim. The young kid, now I know it's hard to pronounce these names, so I'm going to slow it down for you. It's Kotaro Kiyomiya. And the best thing to remember about Japanese names is try not to use an accent in any of them. So it's not Kiyomiya or Kiyomiya or anything like that, just Kiyomiya. All right, the kid from Waseda, what do you think?
The kid from Waseda, whose father is a rugby coach.
And
yes.
He looks like Babe Ruth. This kid
does
looks
look.
Like
he looks a lot like. He also looks a lot like Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. He's a horse. He's 17. Now, he cannot turn pro. The rule in Japan is this. Okay, now high school is not compulsory in Japan. Therefore, you don't have to play professional baseball out of high school. If you're 16 and not in school, you can play pro ball. But almost all the kids will go to high school. Now, he's playing in high school, therefore he cannot play until he graduates, which means the first year he could go in the draft is 2018. So there's that. And he's probably, because his father is a huge Waseda guy, was a Waseda captain and Waseda manager. I'm guessing the chances are really good he's going to go to Waseda University.
All right. Well, the only example I found was Kento Tsujimoto in 2004 was the youngest player drafted at 15 years, and I forgot the months. And the reason he was drafted and was able to actually join the team was because his birthday was on the right date. He turned the proper age by the time that he was supposed to, but I don't know the specifics of why he was able to be drafted at that age.
Well, because he was above the limit, which is, I think he turned 16 before he signed.
Right. Okay. All right. We have one more question, but we're going to have to hold it till next week because I see the producer giving me the eye.
Well, that's because he's fond of you, man.
All right. All right. Anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast, or you can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening.